Welcome to the Plan B CRNA podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Jones, and I'm so excited that you're here. The Plan B CRNA podcast is the only show made specifically for nurse anesthetists who are exploring options outside of their traditional career paths. This is the place to expand your mind and your goals as we uncover new ways to produce side income together. Journey with me as I go down various rabbit holes to explore the best Plan B options for you. This episode is brought to you by OnCall Capital. OnCall Capital is dedicated to educating CRNAs and other healthcare providers about investing outside of the traditional stock market. OnCall Capital also provides opportunities for you, yes, you, to create passive income and generational wealth while also lowering your taxable income through investments in the apartment and alternative investment spaces. If you haven't hit subscribe yet, make sure you do that right now so that you don't miss an episode. Thanks so much for joining me today, and now on with the show. Welcome to the rabbit hole on the Plan B CRNA podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Jones, and throughout my journey in finding a Plan B, I've gone down numerous rabbit holes to figure out which ones work for me. Since I've done some of this research already, I only think it's right to bring that information to fellow healthcare professionals to help aid in your search. As always, it's important for you, the listener, to do your own research and form your own opinions. Everyone's situation is unique, and a Plan B that works for one CRNA doesn't always work for another. Self-awareness is the key in any decision you make, since you must have an accurate grasp of your own strengths, weaknesses, and goals. Today's topic is inspired by my own history in this particular space, or attempted history anyway. Our rabbit hole of the day is, dun dun dun, craft brewing. This topic is a fun one, but it is pretty extensive. And as a result, I've actually split this into two parts. This is part one, which will focus on the history, the opportunity, and the various options available to you. The second part will air in 2 weeks, focusing on the actual steps necessary to take action, as well as the pros and cons. I've spoken with a lot of people over the years about brewing, and one of the most common dreams that many men and many women have, too, is to own a brewery. I mean, it just seems like it would be a pretty cool thing to be a part of, right? It's a lighthearted atmosphere with party vibes, and everyone's just having a good time. You're also able to express your creative side, making something for others that makes them happy. Several years ago, I partnered up with a brewer and a restaurateur to do just that. This was back in 2015, 2016, in the midst of the craft beer craze that continues today. We wanted to create a brew pub in our area because we saw the demand without enough supply. At the time, there were only 3 to 4 breweries in Winston-Salem, and our market research told us that the area could easily sustain 8 to 10 of them. 8 years later, and there are currently 8 of them in the city. We thought we had the right team, with me handling the business plan, marketing, and advertising, Hunter handling the restaurant build-out, staffing, and menu, and Trey handling the brewing equipment and daily beer brewing operations. We had some attorneys on our team, too, who specialized in craft brewing laws to help us out. Our business plan and concept was set up. Our research was spot on, and our energy was infectious. So we started touring potential locations. There were a lot of decent options, and we were okay with renting if we couldn't purchase a property outright. But eventually, the commercial realtors wanted to do more than just show us around. They wanted us to actually have funding lined up before showing us any more properties. Go figure, right? I mean, I guess it's fair. So we found out that we could get $200,000 in brewing equipment for zero money down, which was fantastic. It was a regional bank in North Carolina that had these loans available for craft brewers. We had about $70,000 on hand to put into the rest of the business too. So then we started to talk to the banks, and apparently we needed more money, like a lot more. 3 times what we had at least, and much more than the 3 of us could hope to come up with at the time. The reasoning behind that from the banks was the restaurant component of our business plan. You see, 85 to 90% of restaurants fail. So it's a huge risk on the part of the bank, and they needed us to have more skin in the game. Our attorneys told us that we could just change tactics. Just open the brewery and have food trucks for a while. Breweries are actually incredibly successful. Then we could do more research about what our customers like, and we could build out a restaurant later if we were successful. But we were stubborn for a couple of reasons. Our business plan was contingent upon a restaurant providing a certain level of profit. We wanted more streams of income than just from the brewery operations alone to protect ourselves. Plus, you know, Hunter wouldn't have much of anything to do without an actual restaurant there. I mean, I guess he could just hang out, but not exactly what he was there for. So after months and months of planning, scouting, and conversations, our dream died. And in hindsight, it was probably for the best, but it was fun while it lasted. Now, does this mean that you can't start a brewery? Absolutely not. There is more than one way to skin a cat. Okay, I just grossed myself out with that saying just then. There's got to be a better way to say that. But the main thing is settling on a plan that works for you and your team that you can actually execute. Our problems were naivety with regard to the banks, as well as inflexibility within our own business plan. You don't have to suffer the same fate or make the same mistakes that we did. But before we get to all of that, let's look at a little bit of history, shall we? The boom in U.S. craft beer began in the 1990s, but it has truly been a rebirth. If you can believe it, there were close to 2,000 breweries in our country at the start of the 20th century, after a peak of over 4,000 in 1873. So how did we get from there to under 100 breweries in the country in the 1980s? Well, the combination of Prohibition in the 1920s, followed by World War II, served to decimate America's beer culture, and it led to relentless consolidation and the near death of flavorful local brews. Fritz Maytag actually purchased a stake in Anchor Brewing in 1965, which served as a seminal event, and the now famous Cascade Hop was made available to brewers in 1972. Jimmy Carter legalized home brewing in 1978, and Sierra Nevada Brewing was founded a year later. Boston Beer Company was founded in 1984 at the historical Bottom. And Anchor, Sierra Nevada, and Boston Beer would spur America's beer comeback. Today, there are over 7,000 breweries in the U.S. producing and shipping roughly 200 million barrels of beer per year. Craft beer sales increased by 21% in the U.S. to $26.8 billion from 2020 to 2021, accounting for roughly 27% of the $100 billion U.S. beer market. Now, much of that growth resulted from larger amounts of people going back to restaurants and bands or and bars after COVID-19, but the growth in craft beer's share of the overall market has been steady over the last decade. The global beer market was estimated at $731 billion in 2022, and it's expected to grow to $1.25 trillion, with an expected growth rate of 7% by 2030. There has been an enormous surge in demand for craft beer, with younger drinkers preferring a variety of styles and taste profiles. Now, for more statistics, I highly suggest visiting brewersassociation.org, where they break down craft beer statistics on a state-to-state basis and provide updates on state laws. For example, Alaska and Alabama have just over 50 craft breweries apiece, but that accounts for a lot more of the beer market in Alaska than it does in Alabama. Now, does that mean that folks in Alabama are drinking less than those in Alaska? Maybe, but it probably actually means that big brewers like Anheuser-Busch and Miller Coors have a much larger foothold in Alabama. And that could mean that there's actually more room for growth of craft brewing in Alabama. It's food for thought anyway. California, on the other hand, has 931 craft breweries, good for number one in the country in barrels of craft beer produced and economic impact. For a long time, the West Coast has been a haven for craft beer lovers. But now cities like Portland, Maine, Asheville, North Carolina, and Kalamazoo, Michigan are challenging those notions. In truth, there is great craft beer all over the country, and there is still room for more. So how can you get into this space? There are a number of different ways, actually. Each of them has their own particular business plan, and each of them has their own advantages and disadvantages. So let's get into it. Number one is the nano brewery. First off, beer volume is measured in the U.S. by barrels, or BBL. You may know them better as kegs, though. One barrel is 31 gallons of beer, or 248 pints. By definition, nano breweries are those that brew between 1/2 to 3.5 barrels per batch. As nano indicates, these are pretty small amounts for production brewing. These are normally a starting point for expert home brewers who want to take it to the next level but don't want to actually run a big operation or carry any debt. Nano breweries are cheaper to start than the other options out there, with equipment costing between $40,000 to $60,000. They also require less heavy lifting since you're dealing with smaller quantities overall. However, they rely on inefficient processes because it pretty much takes the same energy and time to make 3 barrels of beer as it does 10 or 20. And they're often too small to keep up with the demand or try to even do retail for a profit. Most importantly, though, they provide a chance for proof of concept. This makes nano brewing a decent stepping stone into the space because you can get started on the cheap and then attract more capital needed to expand once you've developed that proof of concept. Now, number two is the microbrewery. These are production facilities that brew between 7 to 30 barrel batches. Now, this is the route that most folks take when they're serious about crafting and selling beer as a business, and they also happen to have some serious capital. The goal is to brew beer and get it into people's hands through any and all means. Retail distribution to other bars and stores? Check. You can choose to just use kegs in the beginning, or you can have a bottling and canning setup too. Start your own tap room? Check. Many states also allow microbreweries to run their own tap rooms, but you'll have to check to make sure whether or not they require food service. Now, microbreweries are in the middle when it comes to expense. Brand new 10 to 15 barrel equipment is going to cost, it was going to cost us around $180,000 to $200,000 back in 2016. Now that cost has gone up to between $225,000 to $250,000. This size is pretty perfect when it actually comes to producing enough beer because you can really adjust your brewing schedule as needed. In the beginning, you may only brew once or twice a week, but that could increase to 7 days a week when demand really kicks in, or even a couple times a day. It just depends on how you want to work your staff. Now, you may have merchandise for branding purposes, but you are relying primarily on sales of beer for revenue. This means that you have to distribute, which can be done in-house or through a distributor. Doing it yourself means more work and expense on your part since you need vehicles and, you know, additional team members to drive those kegs, bottles, and cans all over the place. Depending on your state or region, you may have difficulty finding a distributor who actually cares about your beer since they already have a couple of hundred others in their stable. And let's face it, no one cares about your beer like you do. Now, with a microbrewery, it is truly a business operation. You need tight bookkeeping and advanced marketing concepts. You must know your market segment and seize it before someone else does. Branding is so, so important. It's a crowded market, and you'll need to stand out in order to sell enough to be profitable. This takes us to number three, the brew pub. This is what my team was after. It was the holy grail, at least for us. A brew pub is simply a microbrewery attached to a restaurant. The restaurant is full service and should draw customers on the merit of its food in addition to the quality of its beer. A 7 to 10 barrel system typically works just fine for this setup, but in truth, we wanted even more than that. We wanted the three-legged stool, meaning that we had three revenue streams to protect us: beer, food, and entertainment. Our ultimate goal was to have live bands and entertainment that would also draw customers in. And our dream was a varied business enterprise composing of retail, wholesale, food, beverage, entertainment, and merchandising. This is all possible with a brew pub and with much deeper pockets than we had at the time. Now, the brew pub first came to prominence in the 80s and then peaked in the 90s. The concept fell out of favor due to its high risk, high reward nature. They are very expensive to start up. I mean, it was going to run us about $1 million in capital back in 2016. You need a larger space to accommodate both a brewing operation and a full service restaurant. We weren't going to be able to go under 6,000 square feet to fit everything in, and we preferred 10,000 square feet or above, which really limited our options. Plus, both the food and the beer must be top quality to attract enough customers to cover the massive overhead that you have with a large staff, payroll, and tax liabilities. Now, this doesn't mean that the concept can't work, though. Foothills Brewing in Winston-Salem and Asheville Brewing Company over in Asheville were two wonderful examples of what could be, and they are both still cranking out great beer and food to this day. Now, Number four, the tap room. This is something I've seen popping up in various places. Beer is the star of the show, with maybe some wine involved as well. But for our purposes, I'm going to just stick with the beer. These tap rooms often have a bit of a classy bar feel to them, but they offer an array of local beers from breweries with whom the owner has established some relationship with. Tap rooms are in relatively high demand as hangout spots because they give you that local feel. I recently went to a board game night at a local spot, and it was a lot of fun. They gave me a card that I could use on their self-serve tap wall, and the card kept track of the beers that I poured and how much. The key is providing just enough entertainment, like trivia or karaoke nights, to keep folks interested, but not too much to turn them off and kill the vibe. It's a delicate balance that's designed to create a casual, friendly atmosphere that is based on your particular clientele. Now, there are many benefits to taking this route. It is much less costly than brewing your own beer. If you do a self-pour tap system, it's going to cost you around $700 to $1,000 per tap when you're building it out. And there are plenty of options out there. Some of the best direction I found was at pourmybeer.com, which provides a ton of resources for getting your own self-pour tap room off the ground, including Self-Pour University, where they've helped over 500 people open their own spots. Now, of course, you don't have to do self-pour. You can just open a spot up with a lot of local taps where you and your staff pour the drinks. It's completely up to you. The nice thing is that you can shine a spotlight on the local brewing community while not actually having to deal with all of the headaches of crafting and marketing your own brand. And finally, number five, the bar. The last of our options. This is probably the least exciting of the bunch, but I wanted to mention it, even though I don't want to spend too much time here, because I'm not sure that this is what you guys are really interested in. A bar typically serves all kinds of alcohol, not just beer. But you can highlight local beers, wines, and spirits at your place should you choose. The cost can be anywhere between $110,000 to $850,000 to set up a bar, according to Investopedia, depending on the size of the space, the inclusion of food options, and the cost of payroll. The average gross profit margin for a bar is between 70 to 80%, which is pretty big. And I think we all know that drinks are marked up pretty drastically when you go out. Now, it may be a few years before you can actually get operating costs down to be able to take home a salary, but the average bar owner salary is $3,300 per month, based on a monthly bar revenue with average costs of around $24,200. Again, this can vary a lot based on the region you're in, the bar's location, the clientele that you have. High-end bars can make significantly more income, but it can take a lot of work and a lot of time, no matter the market you choose. It's an active business, even when you have staff to handle much of it for you. Now, as we close up, there are a ton of resources out there to help you in your craft brewing journey, and I've included a lot of those in the show notes. Next week, I'm going to talk more about some of the books and other resources that are out there to help you actually get started. But I hope you'll check out the notes this week, too. And that's going to do it for the show. As always, I'd like to thank you for listening to the Plan B CRNA podcast. And if you found value today, make sure you hit subscribe and give us a 5-star review. This show only grows because of you, so make sure you share it with a friend, family member, or colleague to help them on their side income journey. I also want to hear from you. If you have a question, comment, or rabbit hole topic that you'd like me to cover in an upcoming show, just put it in your review of the podcast. I check those all the time, and I cover those questions in future episodes. If you'd like to know more about me and gain access to passive income opportunities, make sure to find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, or visit my website at www.oncallinvestments.com. This is Bobby Jones signing off. Until next time, be safe and take care of each other out there. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Plan B CRNA podcast. If you haven't already subscribed and reviewed the show, I'd be honored if you took the extra time. It really helps to expand our reach and get the word out about the show. If you're a CRNA who is interested in sharing your story on our podcast, I'd love to have you. Please email me at bobby@oncallinvestments.com for more information. This episode was brought to you by OnCall Capital. They are dedicated to helping providers like you develop passive income and generational wealth through investments in the apartment and alternative investment spaces. Feel free to check out their website at www.oncallinvestments.com and subscribe to their free educational email series. You can find OnCall Capital on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also check out our YouTube page, where you'll find all of the show episodes along with other educational videos. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.